You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, 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 revolutionaries. How are you? You've reached it once again, the Rational Revolution here on Civic Media. Mark Becker is your host. Hey, that's me. We're here for another week. And hey, I've got, if you missed it last week, you can download the Civic Media app. You can text into the show like we asked last week. You can do all sorts of fun stuff. You can listen to all of our episodes. And I would listen to this one on repeat because this guest, let me tell you, we got a powerhouse one for you. This guy is a groundbreaking former lieutenant governor of Maryland, former chairman of the RNC. Yes, the big RNC, current co-host of the political show The Weekend, which airs at 7 o'clock on MSNBC. The incomparable Mr. Michael Steele joins us here on The Rational Revolution. How are you, sir?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. It's good to be with you in your house, as we like to say.
Thank you so much. You know, I have to say, when I was climbing up the political ladder here in Wisconsin on the Republican side, you were the chairman. Mm-hmm. And I listened to, you know, everything that you said. I followed you, and it was, I always describe myself as like a fiscal conservative with a social conscience. I was a big tent Republican.
Yeah.
And like in Wisconsin, I was the only GOP official to, for example, support marriage equality. But like, to me, you were the embodiment of what it meant to be a Republican. You're welcoming for people who didn't always go along with everything, but you always made sure there was a place at your table for someone like me. And so, like, you know, that's the Republican that I wanted to be. So thank you for that.
No, thank you. I mean, there's a place at the table for someone like you, because how else do we grow? How else do we thrive? How else do we stay connected to how America is changing? America of 2024 is not the America of 2020, let alone 1950 right. or 1876.
Right.
So, you know, we have to understand and be mindful of our own journey to this great land. I mean, look, as someone whose ancestors were brought here in chains, I own this now.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'm good. You know, yeah. It worked. It worked out. The words on parchment actually worked out.
Right.
And so it's important that we keep that in mind. It's one of our strengths, I believe, as Americans, to look at our room and say, you know what? We need to let some more people in here because the air is getting a little bit stale.
Do you still consider yourself a Republican?
I do, because it pisses them off. You know, that's, I do. Absolutely. I am a card-carrying, hardcore, conservative, you know, Catholic Republican from Maryland. Yes. Thank you very much.
All right. Hell yeah.
And
there we go.
And there's not a damn person in this party, starting with Donald Trump, who can say otherwise. And I think we need to be clear about that. You don't get to tell me what I am and who I am and what I stand for. You don't get to do that. And if the sign above the door says open, I'm coming in. And if I don't like what's in the room, I'm going to try to change it. That's it. And that's what I've tried to do from my very, very first steps into the Republican Party in 1976. So all these latecomers, all these people just showing up, you know, claiming ground that they have not earned to claim because they've not put in the work. They've not built the party. You know, they just need to step aside for a moment. So.
Well, you know, and I look at some of the stuff that you've done, you know, founding like the Republican Leadership Council, which was, you know, the platform of fiscally conservative, socially inclusive policies, like, you know, having the gall to say, hey, we should protect the environment, you know, and protect individual rights. I mean, like you were fighting those culture wars before it was cool. Where is that party today?
Well, that party is largely recessed from the main stage because of the very, I say heavy-handed, to put it politely, kind of, you know, Bogart your way into the space and take over kind of approach. I mean, look, Donald Trump, and there's video out here, so I'm not, what I'm about to say, you can search and find it very easily. Donald Trump was very clear when he was considering running for president back in the 1980s. One of the things he had to decide is which party could he have take the most advantage of.
Yep.
Basically, that's what he said. He said, which one is the most gullible?
Yep.
And he settled on us.
Right. For better
God
or
help
for worse.
Us, right? Right. And I think a lot of it has to do with one of the interesting challenges of the Republican Party has always been a fight for its existence. Even coming out of the Whig Party as it did, the battle during the war, Civil War, then Reconstruction, then Jim Crow, then Civil Rights, and now in the modern era where you're looking, as you noted, individuals like yourself who are conservatives, they see that, you know, and conservative means I want to conserve posterity. I want to be able to protect it so it can be there for future generations, right? Mm-hmm. And the social fabric is very much a part of that posterity, what mm-hmm. we hand on and how we define ourselves in this moment to set up how future generations will do the same, but differently. And that's always been a struggle for us because at various times we have wanted to be the popular kid on the block.
Yes.
And so we've gravitated towards baser instincts as we did with our little dance with the John Birch Society in the 1950s. And we did with, you know, Nixon's Southern strategy to invite, angry white Southern men who were pissed off the Democrats and embraced the civil rights agenda that we put on the national table. So we've always had this struggle, and it's taken, Mark, I think, individuals like yourself, leaders who stand up and say, this is who we are. That's the strength of Reagan. Reagan talked about America being a shining city on the hill. Well, why did that city shine? It's because of the people and the values inside that city. And that's what he tried to anchor the country around. When you read and listen to his words on immigration, when you read and listen to his words about growth and prosperity, it's very much an inclusive conversation. It's not, we're going to build a wall, we're going right. to, you know, haul you off into a concentration camps and ship you out of here, and we're going to use the government as a weapon against those we don't like. That's not Republicanism, but that's unfortunately where we are, and that party you and I are, you know, very much a part of, has recessed, and now we're trying to fight to give it some new ground to stand on.
It's funny, you know, there was, we have a friend of mine who was a former mayor of Green Bay here, and he told me just like 20 minutes ago, he's like, oh, you're a big Democrat, right? And I was like, well, hold on now, you know, hi.
Right.
And so it's like what I believe in limited government, low taxes, fiscal conservatism. But I also believe that my brother, who is gay, should be able to marry the person he wants. I believe that my wife, who is a black woman, shouldn't see a major political party embracing, you know, the Confederate flag and racists. And I believe in that economic inequality is real, and we should do something about that. So where is my home? Is that in the GOP?
It's not in this version of the GOP, but that what you just described was where the Republican Party once was.
Yes.
It's funny you mention that because just a few nights ago, I was in South Carolina doing an event there and at Wolford College, which is a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yes.
Wonderful people. And a gentleman came up to me after my talk, and he shook my hand. And he looked at me, he says, I remember when you stood up for log cabin Republicans.
Yes. Yep.
And he said, people don't even know what a log cabin Republican is today, but you did at the very beginning.
Yes.
When you came on the scene. And for me, and for those who don't know, log cabin Republicans are gay, lesbian Republicans. Right?
Yep.
It was formed in the 1960s, and the Republican Party was the first to embrace.
Yeah. Yes.
The liberties yep. of gay and lesbian individuals in this country.
Right.
And so we act as if that is foreign to us. But in fact, it, and those who are in that space right now, saying all the ugly crap, behaving the way they are, trying to strip these individuals of their rights, don't understand our history, don't know our history. Our history was born out of liberty for everybody. I mean, that was the central theme and reason why we broke from the Whigs, because we believe those words that all of us are created equally and free. And so it, that's been, for me, a very animating principle. Now, how do we get back to that? Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you, Mark, that's the battle ahead, baby. Y'all better strap it up, because what's coming after November is going to be the game. Because whether Donald Trump wins or loses, the fight is on for what is going to be the Republican Party. And if and just so people know, if this current structure is the one that can't stand, we're ready to do something else. Don't worry.
Yeah, okay.
We got ground covered. But the fact is, we need to have that fight. It's been a fight that's been avoided since Reagan left in 1989, when then the question was, who is the next Reagan? And instead of trying to answer who is the next Reagan, the party lost sight of the fact that what Reagan left behind was what we must do as Republicans, how we lead in a changing world, why our alliances are valuable and important. He didn't call Russia, you know, the Soviet Union, the evil empire, just because it was a nice movie theme. He said it because it principally stood for something that was antithetical from what freedom requires. And so where is that party? Well, there are those of us who are ready to fight for those values again, and are ready to have that battle, which is why we're standing with Kamala Harris, so we can have that fight. Because otherwise, you know, what is there? This, I mean, Donald Trump just actually called for a purge.
Yeah.
I mean, are you kidding me? Oh, so you just want the police to run, rove the streets free, along with anybody else who has a gun and a weapon, just to make a point, you know, to strike fear in everybody. I mean, it's just, this is not the country that the founders left for us. And the fact that we are, that some of our neighbors, friends, family members, community leaders, are buying into this is something we have to guard against and stand against, in my view.
Yeah, and we're talking with former RNC chairman Michael Steele. We're gonna hit on that a little bit more here in the next segment here, because I do want to talk about, you know, where is that party? Where are we going? And later we're gonna kind of game, you go through the war games of if Trump wins, if Trump loses, what happens? We'll continue this discussion here on the other side. You're on the Rational Revolution with Mark Becker. Sometimes I just want to let this music go. Like, it's good stuff, man. You got the Rational Revolution. What's up, revolutionaries? We've got a heck of a guest here. Your friend and mine, former RNC chairman Michael Steele. We're talking about, you know, where was the party and where are we going to go? So a couple of years ago, actually, it was a long time. Well, back in when Trump lost, I had a phone call. That's now, I guess, an infamous phone call with Senator Ron Johnson, where he told me basically, he said, you know, because I said to him, Ron, you know that Trump lost. And he said, well, I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to say that publicly. And so it was terrible. And so I, like, that just ate at me and ate at me and ate at me. Yeah. And I reached out to a friend that I met. His name is Tim Miller. And I said, I got this thing. And so he's like, write the article. And I talked to Tim Miller and Charlie Sykes, good old Wisconsinite, Charlie.
They're both my buddies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Charlie's, they're both absolutely wonderful folks. So I wrote the article and it blew up. And then, you know, Ron Johnson kind of, you know, whatever, said I was a slime scum, whatever. But I get where I'm going with this is the Republican Party. You know, there's no real moral compass here. No. And so like we go to these low points, and when do we get to a point where we don't have to have this conversation? And when I wrote that article, I was contacted by a group of people called they call themselves the Meeting of the Concerned. I don't know if I should say this, whatever. Mm-hmm. But they're the people from the Niskanen Center, which is a...
I know them, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They're a think tank. They're brilliant, brilliant, brilliant people. And they meet and talk about, okay, what do we do next? So I guess Michael Steele, former leader of the Republican Party, what do we do?
Well, so let's start with the most important ingredient to this, with the likes of Ron Johnson, Reince Priebus, Lindsey Graham, goes to the list. I do name names, by the way.
No, you should. Well, and like Lindsey Graham went from like the dude that has, you know, John McCain's best buddy, the guy that was the voice of reason, to drinking the Kool-Aid, just getting absolutely blitzed.
This wasn't drinking. This was an outright taking the needle and injecting it directly
right,
into
oh
the
Oh, my
veins.
God. Right.
That's exactly what that was. But the bottom line for all of these individuals, every last one of them, and I know them all very well.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to find or have a soul. You talk about the soul of the party when you spend most of your time bent over.
Yeah,
and you are a supplicant to someone else, to someone else's ideology, which is not aligned with yours, to someone else's values, which are not aligned with yours. And when you give over and give in to that, this is what you get. At the core of any inflection point is the one thing you and I will always look towards, and this is true regardless of your political persuasion, your party, your belief system, you're always going to look to the leaders to see, what do we do here? What do we do in this moment? How do we move forward? And when you see your leaders splayed out on the floor in front of a demigod that they've created, and giving over their power and authority to that individual, this is what you get. This is the tension you have. When the party danced, I mentioned the John Birch Society a little moment ago.
Yep.
When the party danced with the John Birch Society, there were leaders in the party who stood up and said, hell no, we're not going with this racist crazy, because that's not who we are.
Yeah.
We fought against Jim Crow. We freed the black man and the black woman. We created 40 Acres and the Mule, the first affirmative action programs, right? We were the party that stood for creating the lane for those who were enslaved to find the American dream and to become a part of continuing to build this country. So they said no, and they shut it down. And the John Birch Society didn't take hold inside the party the way it tried. You have other moments in recent times with John McCain, when the woman during the 08 campaign started going after Barack Obama in very racist terms. He stood, his leadership showed us how to lead in that moment, mm-hmm. and said no. When George, after 9/11, when everyone wanted to go after Muslims and blame every Muslim they knew and saw for 9/11, it was George Bush who stood there very firmly and said, no, that's not what we do. That's not who we are. He didn't capitulate. He didn't make himself a supplicant to those who wanted to go down the road of hate and retribution. We have now a political leader who says, I am your retribution.
Yeah.
That I want to be a dictator. That I want an America that when I walk in the room, everybody stands up. That's what I want. And you have political leadership like Ron Johnson, Reince Priebus, and others who stand up and say, yes, sir, to that. More please to that. And it creates the kind of tensions that we see right now inside our Republican Party and outside and across the country, where we feed that beast to the point where nearly half of all Americans are like, yeah, give me the dictator. I'm like, do you even know what the term means? Do you know what happens under a dictatorship? Do you have any idea? You know, you're talking about Viktor Orban. You're talking about him like a hero. Go to his country and try to do the things there that you can do here in the U.S. and see what happens to you.
Yeah.
And you know, they don't appreciate that.
No. And it's something that I was thinking about as I was driving in. Like, you know, there's so much good that's going on. But, you know, in politics, because, like, I think one of the things that I've learned in this coalition that Kamala Harris is building is that it's true. There is so much more that unites us than divides us. Because,
And
if we have a coalition of people that stretches from AOC to a former chairman of the Republican National Committee, like, there's some good stuff going on. And we're going to continue this discussion here with RNC Chairman Michael Steele here on the other side of the break.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. You've got Mark Becker, and you've also got former chairman of the RNC, Michael Steele. He's a co-host of the political show The Weekend, which airs on MSNBC 7 o'clock. If you like what he's got to say, check out those shows, because I have. It really is fantastic. And we're talking about the coalition, the fact that there is so much more that unites us than divides us. However, the overarching theme that I have is, the coalition stretches from Mitt Romney to Michael Steele to AOC to, you know, to Adam Schiff, and which is good. It's amazing. But it shouldn't take that type of a coalition to defeat a convicted felon who is going to be placed on trial for trying to overturn a Democratic election. Why?
I know.
It's crazy.
And dude, is why I start my day with a gin and tonic. When I stop and actually think about it,
yes,
like, what the hell? Those people, I don't get it. Yeah, exactly.
And it's a close race.
Like, it's a close race.
What
it's
are
a
we doing?
Close race. You have 47% plus of the American people. It's like, yes, give me the convicted felon. And look, I get it. You know, in my view, I've played patty cake with these folks for a long time now, and I'm done playing patty cake.
Good.
I really am. I'm done with the, let's try to figure it out. Let's figure them out. You know, don't call, don't say this about them. Don't say, nah, baby, look, here's the bottom line. The man in front of you says he wants to be a dictator.
Yep.
He was convicted on 34 counts. He was adjudged a serial sexual predator. Not only was he adjudged that, we've heard him on tape talk about how he would treat your daughter if he met her.
Yeah.
Let's put it real.
Yeah.
If your 18-year-old daughter was in a pageant and he came up on her, that's what he thinks about her. But no, you don't seem to think that that's okay. And to my evangelical brothers and sisters out there, y'all need to just shut up and sit down right now, because you are all off base. All off base. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
When you start creating iconographs of Donald Trump as Moses and Jesus,
yeah,
you have lost
your
way. You have lost your ever loving way. So just sit down and sit this one out.
Right.
All right. Because you are wrong. You are wrong. And don't ever open your mouth up about anybody else and how they live their life.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you say a damn word to them, because you've lost the blessing that Jesus gave you to evangelize, because that's not evangelization anymore.
Yeah, that Jesus would have been like, what in the hell are you doing?
Thank you. So you have all of these pieces. that are out there, and people are grabbing those pieces. And so at a certain level, what it is saying is, I'm desperate for something.
Right.
And that's, he gives me that something. And I don't, I can't speak to that. I don't know why, you know, when I talk to someone and they tell, this is literally a conversation I had this summer with someone who was railing on about how bad the economy was. Oh my God, the cost of gas, the cost of eggs, the cost of milk, inflation. And I looked at him, I said, but you're behind about to take a $10,000 vacation with you and your family to Europe, aren't you?
Right.
Well, that's different. Well, wait, hold up. Wait a minute, dude. You just sat here and told me how bad everything is, and you're about to get on a plane and take your family of four first class to Europe.
Right.
So it can't be but so bad. So you have this thing where people, you know, are being told it's bad, but they're living lives that aren't necessarily reflecting that. That's not to say that there aren't people who are going through hard times. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah, right, right.
I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that every recovery is uneven.
Yeah.
And the goal of any administration is to have as many boats rise with that recovery as possible.
Yeah.
And to the extent that there are boats that do not rise, that's where you take those extra measures to sort of help them catch up with the recovery that's at hand. And that's not Joe Biden. That's not Donald Trump. That's every president.
That's America.
Gone through. Right. That's America. Who's right. gone through that economic trouble. That's the way that recovery plays out. And so it's amazing to me to hear people make the excuse for their support of someone they would otherwise not want their daughters to date, not want their sons to emulate. And yet and still they hold him up as a role model in their personal life, where he is much more their personal savior than Jesus Christ himself.
Right.
And that to me is something that sociologists and psychiatrists are going to have to study to help us, a future generation, understand. I don't think we can fully understand it in this moment because we're in it. It's like they're still trying to untangle the Germans who bought Nazism back in the 1930s.
Right.
And who saw what was coming but ignored it.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels.
And there is. So I stopped trying to figure it out. I just speak truth to power. And I just tell people what it is. Look, when you lose me when you say you want to be a dictator, anything you say after that doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter. I don't care.
Right.
I don't care. If you give me the greatest economy on the planet, I'm not supporting you because you've already told me what you think of our Constitution. He says he wants to tear it up. You've already told me what you think of the American people, that they aren't the governing the governors of this country, but he is. As he said, he wants everybody to love him and stand up and worship him when he comes in a room. So I don't need much more convincing beyond that.
Well, now, and then there's, you know, that whole, like,
Nikki Haley
trying to,
were our nominee.
Yeah,
I was going to say, Mark, if Nikki Haley were the nominee of the Republican Party or Chris Christie, we'd be in a very different conversation right now.
100%. Yeah, and you know, and not only that, you know, with being a dictator, but trying to overturn the will of the people. That's pretty disgusting. What happens if, let's game this. God willing, Trump loses in a month.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to the GOP? I remember, you know, Reince Priebus did his infamous autopsy and all this other things. You know, does the party continue, or does, like, Don Jr. ride on his Adderall-fueled horse and try to double down and say, I will finish my father's legacy?
I think that's right. Well, look, I think it's the latter. I think it's the latter, man. And look, the RNC consists of 168 members, national committee men and women, and the chairman of every state party, right?
Yep.
Of that 168, about 140-something are MAGA.
Yeah.
You think they're just going to lay down their control of the party and walk away?
No, not a chance.
They're running state party organizations. They're now on boards of elections.
Yeah.
You know, we've got 14 MAGA heads who are sitting actually on boards of elections in three of the battleground states.
Yeah.
And
that's,
you know,
scary.
It's scary. So they're just not going to walk away from that power. They're not going to give that up. We're going to have to take it back from them.
So how do you do that? Is it a new party?
Yeah, it's a new party. It's creating a faction within the party itself. I mean, there are any number of strategies that are being considered relative to what happens on November 6th.
I'm sure you're way more connected with this than I am, but I had a dear friend of mine, Reed Ribble, on the show. He's a former congressman.
Oh, yeah.
And he's the real deal. And, you know, this was months and months ago, and he said, well, I think, you know, when Donald Trump is convicted of those felonies, that'll be a tipping point. And it's like, holy crap, you look at it was not a tipping point. They doubled down. And so it's like the party itself is just lost. It's lost.
It is in the desert of its own creation.
Can it be saved?
No. I don't think in the end it can be, because it has distorted its core self. It has twisted its own values, where it now embraces totalitarianism. It embraces authoritarianism. It is now reignited the ugly and burning flames of racism and hatred when its titular head has dinner with a white nationalist.
Yeah.
And when you have party leaders going back to leadership like Marjorie Taylor Greene,
Matt Gaetz,
and Matt Gaetz and others embracing these people, appearing on stages with the Proud Boys and that type, and giving them legitimacy inside of the Republican Party, how do you think this ends?
They started their convention with people, the January 6th protesters, singing the effing national anthem. Like, oh my God, how disgusting.
Yes. So the thing for me is, baby, let's have the fight, because I just want to beat you upside the head with your own words. I just want to use Reagan to beast slap you into next year, right? That's what I want to do.
So is there enough? Also, sorry, go ahead.
Nothing, but also then let's build something so Republicans, center right, independent voters, who, like you articulated at the very beginning, you know, have conservative principles and values around economic equality and those things, but also recognize the social fabric of this country is changing and helping to shape what that change looks like, that embraces everyone, that recognizes our immigrant history, that is not afraid of the original sin of America, to talk about that and to put it in the proper context to help heal the nation. All of those things, that's the space that I tried to create inside the GOP and got summarily fired for after winning all those seats. They haven't done too much winning since that was their side.
I'm like, that's right. Donald Trump wants to talk about how much winning he had. Hey, let's have a scoreboard check, buddy. You know?
So it's going to be a fight, man. You're going to have to take a side. You're either standing with Lincoln or you're standing with Trump. I'm sorry. That's the way it works. That's why I've always defined myself from the very moment I joined the party at 17, right before my first election in 1976, as a Lincoln Republican.
Yeah.
Even though I listened to Ronald Reagan at that 76th convention and I saw his leadership and I was inspired by that. And he, when I heard his speech and I watched him, was the moment I decided, yes, I want to join this party. Because if this man can talk about America and see me in that America in his defeat, then yes, this is consistent with where Lincoln and Frederick Douglass and those who founded the party wanted us to go. So that made sense to me. That's always been my North Star. And so I'm like, okay, let's start going back in that direction.
It's
going to take some work to do it.
Yeah, when I was in high school, for me that was George W. Bush, and to see his leadership in a time of national crisis was something that was truly inspiring to me. And that's where I kind of got bit by, okay, well, this is, you know, being something, part of something bigger than yourself. And I think, this is this is a moment where if it is a new party, hell, count me in. You got my number. Let's do this, baby. You know, but
right.
You know, and we've got a minute left. Is George W. Bush going to say something? He's got to.
No, he's not.
He's not.
No, he's not. I don't think he is. Well, and look, I'm not going to begrudge George Bush. Yes, would I love for him to come out and put his imprimatur on this race? Because if he did, it would be a game changer.
Yes.
We know that. But I also respect and know him, I think, well enough and respect him a lot to know that when he left office, he walked away from politics.
I know he did.
And so at no time since he left office in 2009, that he has engaged in any political space beyond those times where he gets to hang out with the Obamas at some national event, a funeral or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So he's been a very public president, former president, unlike some.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to begrudge him that. And look, I would love to hear his voice in this. And maybe we'll get lucky and, you know, decide. He may decide at the 11th hour to do it.
Right.
But I just don't see him doing it.
Right.
And I'm not going to begrudge him. That's why we raise up every other voice we can instead.
Hey, Michael Steele, former RNC chair, host of The Weekend on MSNBC. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. And let's continue that discussion about that new party, because, man, that would be great. But thank you so much.
You
appreciate
it, my friend. Take care. Now.
I think, if we listen to what former chairman of the RNC, Michael Steele, had to say, as you got the Rational Revolution, I'm Mark Becker. You know, we're talking about, you want a revolution. Holy cow. That was, he said some pretty big things in that interview. Some huge things. It was, I didn't expect him to say it because there was some stuff that he's never said. He thinks that the Republican Party cannot be saved. Like, that was about as big of a bombshell as I think I've had on this show since I started hosting it. And it's kind of one of those things where I don't know what to say about that. That was a big statement. And I can't thank Michael Steele enough. You know, when I talked about it a little bit when I was up and coming in the GOP and learning, you know, what it meant to be, to have belief system and all of that. Michael Steele was, he was on my Mount Rushmore. You know, everybody's got their Mount Rushmores of something, whether it's personal and political or all that. Michael Steele is absolutely on that Mount Rushmore. And he's that way because of a lot of the things that he talked about when he was here. He talked about being open and inclusive, and he talked about being the first party to embrace LGBT people with the Log Cabin Republicans. And if he explained it a little bit, but the Log Cabin Republicans are a group of conservatives who are gay, and they were brought in and given a place at the Republican Party's table to say, hey, how can we best suit and help you? And I think, like so many things, that group has been silenced by a really, you know, by the MAGA extreme. And it's really sad because, you know, Michael Steele was someone that always talked about being open and welcoming. He truly meant big tent when he said that. He's like, if you're 70-80% of the way there on what we believe, hey, that's a good Republican. But now here we have the party. You have to take that Trump litmus test, you know, in order to run for office, in order to be in party leadership. It's something that's so backwards, and it's something that it's disqualifying for me. He also talked a little bit about the John Birch Society. And I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story. So I was chairman of the Republican Party. And when I first got there, my first meeting, not as chairman, but as a member at large. That's, I think that's what I was called. And there was this self-appointed administrator. And what we did, we met in the basement of a building next to Los Bandidos on the east side of Green Bay. And we met in the basement. This administrator would shut the door and he would read these conspiracy theories and all of these things to the very old board of the Brown County Republican Party. And I later found out this guy was a member of the John Birch Society. And so if you don't, John Birch Society, proud headquarters in Appleton, Wisconsin, they were some of the people that were behind like that Red Scare. And they would, oh, this person's a communist. This person's a communist. And that, like the McCarthyism, that was the John Birch Society. And they're still around. Like they are absolutely still there. And so I when I rose to the rank of chairman, I had the gall and the audacity to say, hey, you know what? Look, we're going to open our doors to our executive meetings. We're going to let people in. And the executive board, led by this guy, tried to kick me out and tried to, you know, overthrow me and as chairman, you know, and the membership elected me. Weird how that kind of scans to what's going on today. But it was the first time in the history of the Republican Party that happened. And so like we had lawyers from like Washington, D.C. and here. And there was like I could truthfully say I had a legal team, you know, and we had to go through this process and write the procedure to take that party back. And oh, my God, was that difficult. It was horrible. And then there was this local reporter that would like follow me all around town. It was good times, really good times. But to my knowledge and to the knowledge of the GOP officials in Washington, that was the first time that ever happened. And so like, you know, we have these big fights in the Republican Party. We have these big fights with people that we disagree with. But I think I said it with Michael Steele that the one thing that I really see now is with this coalition, if there's going to be a third party that tries to kind of knock off the GOP, right now we have a coalition of AOC and Michael Steele and Mitt Romney and freaking Dick Cheney, right? What the hell? So at the very core, if we see something that's positive out of all of this chaos, there truly is more that unites us than that divides us. And I think that, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm really, really hopeful that whatever happens post this election, if there is a new party and a new wave of, you know, moderate conservatives, we can really get a lot done because we've been through this fight. We've been through this battle trying to take our country back and away from people who do actively want to destroy it and turn it into something that's nearly unrecognizable. And that's positive. That's really good. We, you know, I talk, oh, we got doom and gloom all the time. This is not doom and gloom, guys. This is actually a really wonderfully positive, uplifting thing. But it only happens if you keep listening to the show. No, I'm just kidding. It only happens if you get out there and vote and do the right thing and keep those conversations going in your communities, in your families, at your workplaces. Don't ever shut up. All right, guys, I'm going to shut up until next week. We'll see you here on the Rational Revolution. We all want to change
the world. The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.